Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. It is currently the 22nd of August, 2013, here in Japan. Today, we're joined on the line from the United States by Peter Santamaria of AttackThePlanet.com, also at AttackPeter on Twitter. Did I get that URL right, or am I just making that up?
No, you got it. Attack
Good. Okay, well, I hope everyone will go there. Of course, that will be linked up in the show notes, and that's where you can find out more about not only Peter, but of course his work as an artist. And we're going to be talking about his art today, so it would probably be beneficial for everyone who's listening to this audio or watching the video in the vodcast to actually go there and take a look at some of this art. So, Peter, first of all, thank you for joining us on the program today. I appreciate your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, James.
Okay, well, let's get straight into it. You are, as I say, a practicing artist. You've got some very interesting art up on your website. Why don't we start by talking just a little bit about yourself and your background, where you come from, and how you got started into your career?
Absolutely. Well, I'm born in Virginia, raised in Miami, Florida, Cuban-American, and my whole life I've known the story of what happened in Cuba under the revolution of Fidel Castro. My family was very linked into it. My grandfather was a journalist at the time, and we have some great photos of him, you know, with a group of journalists kind of huddled around Fidel and Che Guevara. So I always knew, I always had an inside view of it. And my grandfather was one of the people who actually, you know, realized that this was going to be trouble in Cuba and packed up his wife, his new wife, and my mother, who was 5, and my aunt, who was 7, and just got wind of it and realized we better get out of here. And I say that because there were a lot of people who thought, well, this will be fine, or this is going to be great. So I have a lot of respect and love for the fact that, you know, 2 generations ago, somebody was able to smell the trouble, and probably in the face of his peers who said, oh, you're overreacting, oh, you know. And so to me, it's always been, before I was even paying attention to anything geopolitically, I almost feel like that was instinct into me to question and to be hesitant and upset and bothered by anybody who would try to have so much power over me. So I was obviously a pain in the butt growing up in school. I didn't like, you know, I didn't like being told what to do, but I didn't know why I was doing it. So, but always I had a good sense of humor. And so growing up, I actually played a lot of music in bands, and it wasn't until my mom met my stepfather, who was had arrived from Cuba recently at the time, which is, I was 15 years old, so 15 years ago, that I started to pay more attention again. He was actually a political prisoner in Cuba for making films and artwork protesting the Castro regime. So it's amazing. To me, it's so bizarre, like, how everything kind of lines up. And I remember him appearing in the picture and being this person who was very friendly, very outspoken, insanely knowledgeable. He's like a human library. And we would go to these parties and social gatherings with family, with friends. And I would see how, you know, in a very positive way, he would bring controversial topics up and get people out of this surface relationship and talking about really interesting things. And I would just sit and want to know everything he had to say. And I remember seeing his artwork, and I remember hearing about his stories about being in prison. He was sentenced to 25 years, got out after a year and a half, after being lobbied by some celebrities here in the States to get out for his film. And it was just such an inspiration. And he was also a very humble guy. So he, you'd have to really drag some of this stuff out of him, but it's just amazing. So I always was interested in art and artwork, and I was interested in comics from a young age and all these things. But it wasn't until I started listening to Ron Paul talk in the debates in 2007, which I'm sure a million people will cite the same moment in this country now, that I started to feel like, oh, wait a second, for the first time a politician on a presidential debate is agreeing with me on socially and making sense economically. And it opened up this snowball. My brother and I, we became like ravenous. My brother's way more knowledgeable on this stuff than I was growing up. And so he kind of pointed it out, and we started getting into libertarianism and studying economics. And all of a sudden I had you know, Henry Hazlitt's book, and I had all kinds of stuff on Mises and all that. It was just like this rabbit hole, and I started to realize this, everything kind of tied together in terms of civil liberties, in terms of economics, and I just had an aha moment, and I was so energized. I was so focused and galvanized that I couldn't think about anything else. Everything, I just saw everything through this looking glass. But what really, really, really kind of cemented the fact that, okay, this is not just a moment to have a renaissance, that this is an actual strange conflict going on socially and politically in this country, is I went to see, and I would do this for every candidate who would stop by in Miami, Florida during the 2007-2008 presidential run. They would all stop by this famous restaurant in Miami called Versailles Cafe. And they do it to pander to all the Cubans. They come by, they do the exact same thing. They grab the Cuban coffee, they say a couple of bad words in Spanish poorly, and then they have a laugh and they're out in 5 minutes. So Giuliani came to visit, Rudy Giuliani. And I had seen all of the films about 9/11 from InfoWars, from We Are Change and all that. I've seen all how the firefighters from New York follow him around and rallied against him. And no matter where you stand politically, you can tell this guy's a real scumbag. So I went very peacefully, though. I wasn't looking for problems, but I had this old green Ron Paul shirt. Well, it was new at the time, but now it's all raggedy. And it just said, "Listen to Ron Paul." It was something that you could get on Zazzle at the time. I walked in. I sat at the restaurant, which I've been a million times growing up here. I ordered my Cuban food in Spanish, sat down near where Giuliani was going to speak, pander. And instantly, as soon as the waitress left, I felt this force, these two giant hands grab me right here and rip me out of my seat, so the seat actually fell back behind me. And I couldn't even see who it was. And I always tell people, can you imagine, like, if I was like some kind of armed dude or whatever, I would have, you know, the right to probably do something there. Couldn't even see what was going on. I get dragged and shoved out of the restaurant through a side door. And I'm saying to the guy, whoever it is, "Hey, I just ordered. I'm just going to eat some food." He's like, "You can eat later," with this thick New York accent. So as the door slammed behind me and the door's locked, it's a glass door, I can see it's this plainclothes 300-pound gorilla of a man who obviously was one of, you know, Giuliani's escorts for the day. And it dawned on me for a second. I'm like, okay, here's the negative side, and this is real. Like, the fact that I was wearing the shirt only, because I hadn't said anything, I wasn't passing out literature, the fact that that shirt was on made me think, man, there must be something to this that gets that response out of people. And it made me realize how the news is not real, how everything is filtered, and how what we thought was an ignored movement must be affecting people because of that reaction in this restaurant. And from there going forward, all I could think about was that, and the artwork I wanted to make was about that. And it's been amazing since I started focusing that way.
Well, and now for the benefit of people who are listening to the audio of this, you're wearing a Lysander Spooner No Treason shirt, a very nice one. So
I love to point out that I'm wearing this shirt in solidarity with the artist Dan McCall, whose website, Liberty Maniacs, posted up a shirt on Zazzle that said it's about the NSA, protesting the NSA, but using their logo, and had the shirt taken down for copyright infringement, whatever, even though it's parody and satire. So check that guy out too. He's fantastic.
We certainly will. Let's talk a little bit about your own artistic proclivities. Let's talk about when you decided you wanted to pursue your art and what some of your influences were.
I've always been creative and productive. I always feel, as other artists will say the same thing, I don't feel physically good unless I'm being productive and creative and making something that day. And for a long time, like I mentioned before, I was kind of just meandering through the ether, making work for different reasons and not having a real direction. And when I found that it wasn't really politics that drove me, it was the idea that there's somebody trying to dictate how your life should be lived, that on any level that upsets people. And then there's always going to be people who won't or can't speak for themselves to be heard and to be left alone. So if anybody can, I feel like you should, and you kind of have to. And so my brother and I were very involved in Miami for a while in the political sphere, saying, okay, well, this is our duty. We got to get involved politically. We've got to go into the system through Miami politics, which might as well be a mafia, and try to work our way up there. We did. We had some success. We got people into positions that were influential, but it was just so dirty. Even people who were on our side in terms of philosophy, self-proclaimed libertarians, but at the same time established political figures in Miami, would turn on us and sabotage everything. It was bizarre. So one day I just said, I'm not supposed to be doing this, because as soon as I started making the artwork, like on my website with the political messages, the feedback was instant. The sharing on the social network was instant. I started selling so much artwork instantly, and I'm like, wait a second. The artwork is more effective at creating this culture, this mindset, than being in politics. As we need people to do it in the political sphere. I just don't think I need to be the one doing it. And when I'm doing it on my own and through artwork, I feel like I'm way more effective and way more efficient. That's what I want to do. I mean, I want to be successful. Absolutely. I like to do this full time, but I'd much rather know that the images can be passed around, can be conversation starters, can be laughed at, because I like to use humor. I don't like to be so somber and browbeating. I think it's more effective to use humor. And that to me is a level of success. And so I just want to keep that going. And after figuring that out, like I said, now it's all that I can do. It's all that I can do. It's almost like I feel like I'm failing if days go by and that new idea hasn't come out yet. So that's the force. That's the drive.
Well, again, I hope people are taking a look at attacktheplanet.com so they can check out your work as we're talking here. But let's talk about some of these pieces in particular. And I'd like to start with the Marvel Comics characters with their political slogans. It's obviously quite a powerful and quite a simple message there. But let's talk about that idea and where it came from.
You know, what's funny is, like I said, I know, first of all, that some of the messages to mainstream people are already going to be preloaded with context. For example, saying 9/11 was an inside job now is almost it's almost like a meme that has lost its meaning. It's almost like when Andy Warhol used to do those reproductions of Marilyn Monroe's head. The point of that was to say, yeah, this is Marilyn Monroe, but as soon as I start repeating it over and over and over and over and over again, it's not Marilyn Monroe. It's just this image that loses its meaning after a while. So the reality of it is, anybody who's intelligent, in my opinion, is going to look at the 9/11 official story and say, there's more to this than than is being told. However, it is so difficult to engage intelligent people who disagree with you, because you've been painted and cast almost in advance of the conversation, so you can't really communicate that. So to me, it's so obnoxious that that's the case that I figure the only way to break that ice is to start obnoxiously and using humor and being kind of a pain in the butt about it. So that image of Captain America is not just any Captain America image. It's the classic Jack Kirby classic Age of Comics, specifically chosen because in itself is revered. If Captain America and comics are revered to people as Americana or some sacred part of their childhood, well, this specific depiction of him is even more revered. So I had to pick that one. And then putting that quote underneath, to me, on one layer, it means – it's so interesting. Like, what would it really mean if there were people who were vigilantes and, you know, rogues? Would they be talking about these things? So then they really would be cast out by society if he was really a patriot. You know, that whole, you know, nerdy spiel you can get into if you're a fan of the medium. And then I'm thinking, at the same time, this is like – is part of my childhood and has been hijacked, because now I look back and I say – what I used to read and be like, oh, this is so great, I wish I could kick the bad guys' butts, and, you know, anti-Nazi and all that kind of thing. It's like this Disney image now, okay, is what it is. It's like Mickey Mouse ears. And as fun as the movies and the comics can be, it's empty. It's empty, and it's empty calories. It's like junk food. You can enjoy it, but it's not the only thing you can sustain yourself on. So to me, I liked the idea of I should say that I was preparing to do my first ever comic book convention when I was making these pieces. So I was like, how can I fit into this comic book art world and not leave behind my political influences? And I was on the phone with my friend Brian Reedy, another fantastic artist here in Miami who I work with on the website. And I said, Brian, what can we do? Because we have a similar sense of humor. What can I do that would be so obnoxious and ridiculous, but at the same time, might get me a chance to start having good conversations with people in the convention? Those comic book conventions are notorious. You look at Comic-Con for being these like dens of like bizarreness and arrested development. And there's fantastic art and content, but it's always overshadowed by this idea of consumerism and just weird stuff. And I hate that because I like the artwork and the production of the actual artist. So I want to be there. I want to infiltrate the people that I grew up around. And I'd like to go into the consumerist bubble and break in with this. Because, you know, we have these conversations and we're going to nod back and forth to each other. Like, yep, yep, yep. And we're almost like we're in this loop. So our goals are to get outside and bring people in, get outside and affect pop culture. That's where it is. That's where you get people's attention. There's a contest right now to make Obamacare palatable to kids, I think, right? The White House just released some video contests. It's all about affecting pop culture, affecting the youth. So it's a propaganda war. I want to fight in the propaganda war. And so these images I thought were funny, but they were pertinent at the same time. And to me, like I was saying in the beginning, 9/11 was an inside job. At this point, it's almost more of a trouble starter, troublemaker. Let's start. Let's talk. Let's just get off the – I know you think I'm nuts because I say this, but – let's talk about it. And putting it together, you have to laugh, you have to stop, you have to talk. The best comment I ever got from – I mean, I got tons of people walking by and buying it and, oh, man, this is so awesome and cool. Thanks for putting this here, yada, yada, yada. And then I get my favorite comments of, I'd like to burn that effing thing to the ground. And then I'm just like, fantastic, sir, buy it first and you can burn it all to the ground. And so that's the idea. It's like I want to laugh. I want to laugh because, you know, one of my favorite quotes growing up, I forgot where I first heard it, but it's stuck with me forever. If you want to tell people the truth, make them laugh. Otherwise, they'll kill you, from Oscar Wilde. And nothing could be truer in my life, whether it's my personal job, my day job as a teacher, a high school teacher, with other staff members and administrators, whether it's in the political sphere, whether it's with other artists. I mean, one of the hard parts about my job is that as an artist is just the majority of artists that I'd like to share and network with are very upset about the fact that I make these kind of statements. So whereas the artist used to be the tip of the spear and the artist used to be, you know, challenging the status quo, it's almost like they're just as walled off as anything else. And that's another challenge that I have. So I have to use humor to break down those barriers.
And I think you're doing an excellent job of it. I mean, it's such iconic imagery, and to see that juxtaposition of these, you know, Captain America saying 9/11 was his inside job. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant, I think, on that level. And one of the ironies of the Oscar Wilde quote is that he told the truth, he made people laugh, and they basically, for all intents and purposes, ended up killing him anyway.
Yeah.
Not directly, but still. Again, for the benefit of people who aren't looking at this, it's not only Captain America, but the Incredible Hulk, Hulk smash GMOs, Iron Man, War is a Racket, Spider-Man, Don't Trust the Media. So again, quite brilliant imagery there, I think. Let's talk about some of the other imagery, and one of the recurring motifs that I found interesting is things popping out of other things' heads. Let's talk about some of those. For example, your total sexual assault image.
Yeah, so I was using this composition of like the Russian dolls that would come out of each other. I saw them somewhere one day. I'm like, yeah, it's a cool design motif. But it also, when I used it for the image that I for the one that you're referring to, TSA, total sexual assault, it links the things together. So at the bottom of that image is Pedo Bear. Let me get this right this time because I got a lot of flack last video I did for mistakenly saying where that image originates. It's something associated with pedophiles as a joke. to make fun of pedophiles, but yet it's pedophile related. The figure coming out is in a TSA uniform, but with this kind of goblin orcish head, creepy, like pulling his gloves on. And then coming out of that figure's head is Pogo the Clown, John Wayne Gacy. So again, really somewhat of a stretch. But like I said to the We Are Change guys, it's the fact that there's any connection there is already too much of a problem. So to me, it was so offensive and bizarre and surreal to first follow that the underwear bomber story on mainstream media, to be watching live TV as Chertoff came on and started hawking these scanners like the next day. I mean, talk about it's so bizarre. I feel like I'm living in Idiocracy sometimes when I'm looking at the TV. I'm like, guys, and then actually going to the airport, and now this is the way airport is like life is like for my wife and I who like to travel. You know, it's my wife, and she'll say, okay, babe, the body scanner's on the left, so let's try to lean to the right. And just because, and good news is just by doing that, we've escaped it almost every time. I've never been through it. But, you know, one time I remember we were on a flight home from DC, and it was no one in the airport. I saw the TSA workers, like these beaten down tire guys. And I was trying to crack some jokes with them about I don't know what. And they didn't like that very much. So all of a sudden, ma'am, to my wife, can you come over here? And they didn't do a full groping pat down, but they did this like nonsensical swab to see if she had explosive residue on her hands. And it's just to me, seeing the videos of the people groped, seeing the kids grope, seeing the women and the old people pulled out of their chairs, the urotomy bag spilling on someone. I don't understand how people don't get mad. Sometimes I sit down and I think, am I really like nuts? Am I riled up too much? I don't know. I mean, it gets to the point where when you're surrounded by people telling you, it's just a little squeeze. And it gets to the point where like, man, I don't want people touching my shoulder. Get off me. You know what I mean? And especially these guys who you find out, the defrocked priests, the people assaulting people in the parking lot in uniform. It's to me, it's like if we let that happen, well, the next infringement is so easy. So I have to make these images again, and I have to sell them, and I have to put them out there. And I can much more easily sell, you know, mainstream pop art stuff, but I got to put that out there and sell it and make it palatable. And if I do so, I get to have that conversation every time. And it's amazing because it's making these protest images a topic of friendly conversation as opposed to being this trigger point that when you bring up in conversation with family or friends, it's tense, it's awkward, it's uncomfortable, and you can ruin the whole night if you bring it up. I hate that. All my family growing up, all of us, we talked about every controversial thing all the time, every day, and it was how I questioned myself more. It's how I realized that I was wrong about one thing and right about something else. And it's so frightening that we're going to do this. We're going to go like this and say, nope. So you have to crack jokes. And I have to poke fun. I got to put a little poke with a clown on top so that we can say, oh, my God, this is ridiculous, so that we can have that conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's an important conversation to have, obviously, but one that so few people know how to broach these days. I mean, there's an art form even to broaching conversations, and I think you've hit on that with some of this imagery. You mentioned the kind of goblinish, orcish face of the TSA yeah. agent, and in fact, that's kind of almost one of the themes of some of your other artwork, even some of the less blatantly political artwork.
Yeah.
There's a lot of demonic kind of goblinish figures going around. What's that all about?
It's because that's how I do. I mean, when you see people, it's like the story, my friends and I will be sitting around talking about, oh man, isn't that movie star so attractive, so hot? And I'm like, have you heard that interview she gave where she's talking about nonsense? And it's like instantly by hearing that, it's like the face changes and it's this awful, ugly thing. And it's the same thing. I mean, you've got to call it like it is. It's got to be a negative thing. To be, in my opinion, I have to say on a daily basis when we talk about these things that being a TSA worker has to be negative now. It has to be negative now. It can't be negative 20 years from now when we say, man, that TSA thing, that's how we let everything slip through. That's when everything changed because we said this is a normal job. Hey, somebody's got to, they got to work. They got to eat. They have to, it's a, you know, it's a job. People don't like to grope you. They just have to do it. Well, then I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Because if we can say the same thing about cops, I mean, people have been drawing police officers as pigs forever, you know? And there's obviously plenty of good cops and plenty of corrupt cops. But the same way you have to kind of like, we kind of have to bring down their status a little bit so that you don't go into, you should go into the airport, like, don't even try to touch me. That should be your attitude. That should be your attitude. Don't even try, not like, fine, because that's it. Instantly, you have given up that power over yourself, that value of yourself. So I'm gonna create this creature, whether it's that severed king's head in One Piece or the TSA worker or whatever. I'm gonna show them physically, as you know, on the nose as possible, as being some creep, because that is a creepish thing to do. And can you imagine if all the TSA workers said, "We're not gonna do this"? They either have to fire everybody, or they say, okay, we got to change this policy because no one's doing it anymore. Or they just didn't do it. Civil disobedience. So we have to repaint the image of them, figuratively and literally.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, let's talk about Dream versus Drone.
Yeah, that one's been a real piece of pride for me because it was the first piece of artwork that I took into the comic book conventions that had absolutely no connection to the pop culture or the superhero heads or anything like that. All those pieces are carved from wood, and then, you know, you roll ink on them and you print onto paper. So it's you know, before I do it, I'm like, is this going to be worth doing? Is it going to work? And I said, well, screw it. Let's try it. And so I made, like, I think 10 copies for the first show I did, and I sell them for, like, $40 a pop. And so it's not cheap. You know, people, you know, they have to really like it to buy it. And I sold out of all of them. And not only that, everybody was coming by. And it was almost like, even if they didn't buy it, because I had it behind me, it was almost like they when they would talk, they would say, oh, exactly. Like, I'm not racist. Okay. I don't like the president, but I'm not racist. And it was almost because, and I'm very, it was very humbling, but because I'll put that behind me and sell that proudly, and I will, they're going to walk by and now proudly and almost like they, like, it's okay to talk now. Oh, it's okay to say this now. That's the big thing. Because when we joke about it, there's levity and it's okay to talk about it. And sometimes you realize that there are the people who disagree with you, they don't even really disagree with you, that you're politically, you know, a saying that the president is a warmonger, an embarrassment to the goals and hopes and dreams of, you know, Martin Luther King. It is. I mean, there was a whole thing today. I think Joe Rogan tweeted out the image, and I was looking on Facebook at some of the comments and some of the people saying, you're only comparing the two because they're black. And I'm like, well, that's the idea that Martin Luther King said, one day we're going to get this equality. And my artwork is like, man, did we squander it? Because now it's, maybe that was the opportunity for someone to go in. I mean, anybody knew about political funding knew it wasn't going to happen. But, I mean, you know, maybe that was the chance to have people so infatuated with a leader as a cult of personality that you could use that bully pulpit for good and really call. And I understand why people were enamored with him and identified with them. But at the same time, the idea that every black person is offended by criticizing Obama, that's racist. And the idea that linking Obama with Martin Luther King is racist is ridiculous, because that was the dream. That was the dream. Martin Luther King was anti-war. Martin Luther King received – I mean, there's speeches of Martin Luther King on YouTube talking about the Vietnam War that sound word for word like Ron Paul. It's unreal. And people need to realize that was part of it. And that's why I'm going to link them together. And the third eye blasting that, you know, aura is about, you know, using your mind and being an intellectual. And then Drone and that sappy face that I put on Obama like this useless tool is because that's his legacy. And he wasn't the first and he won't be the last. But it's sad for a lot of people. You and I knew it was going to happen. Sad for a lot of people to look and say, yep, this is it. This is what happened. And we got to talk about it. You know, it's not comfortable for some people, but we got to talk about it.
Well, once again, it's a great way to open that conversation. So I hope people will take a look at that very powerful imagery. Let's talk about one that's less, a little bit more simple in its in the way that it's done, but I think no less effective. It's the message, film the police, with a close-up of a hand holding a smartphone, which is a message that I hope will not be lost on my listeners, because I've talked about it before. But tell us in your own words what that means.
So to start off, I have many, many friends and family members who are police officers. So I'm not, you know, a blanket statement saying police are the enemy, film them all. But I am more saying that that image is trying to make an intellectual protest statement. So non-aggressive, non-violent protest statement. So growing up, listening to music, it was very common to hear F the police. And that was like a rallying cry. And to me, to say that is problematic, because there are probably a lot more police officers that agree with you than you think. And I would never want to – I picture my friends who are police officers. I would never want harm to happen to them. And I know that in their job, they're looking at corruption and frustrated if they can't do anything, or they're trying to change things. I know they are, because I work in a system that's corrupt, the public school system, and I try to make my changes. So for me – film the police is a way to say hold people accountable for their actions. And to film someone isn't to inflict any violence or harm on them, but it's a way to empower them, empower the person filming. And it's a way to say, well, you work for us, technically speaking. The police officers work for the people. They're supposed to be peace officers. It's a reactionary service. Police officers aren't proactively going to prevent a crime from happening. They're going to show up at the scene of the crime to try to mediate. And so film the police, I mean, in light of the recent events here in Miami, there was a kid tased to death for doing graffiti on a wall that was already covered in graffiti. Look, that's a lot of power to wield in a job as a police officer. So you are going to be held to a higher esteem. And if we can't film the police, then why should we be retract and recorded and mined for all our information? So I have that like propaganda feel, holding up the smartphone. And, you know, I really would love that piece to just kind of like cycle. I don't even care if I get credit for it, just to cycle, just to make it like a meme that, yeah, that's what we do. We film the police now. I would love for it for wherever, whenever you're out at night, at a club, at a party, on the beach here in Miami, or wherever you guys go out, to you see police officers coming out, getting out of the car, pull it out. Just pull it out. Just pull it out. Just pull it out. Even if you don't film it, I would love for people to just hold it as if they were filming it. Almost like, you know, it's cool. We're gonna film this. You know, go ahead and do your job, officer. We're not getting in the way, but we're gonna film it. Because if it's only one person here and there, well, I'm gonna film you guys, then it's easy to stop that person out. But if it's like, if it's a thing, you know, you film, like texting and driving is an awful thing to do, and people do it like crazy. So police officers will drive right by as you text and drive, and they're not gonna do anything about it. So
right. But also, I mean, let's not forget that filming the police is legal, and that's been enshrined. That's been ruled over and over and over.
Absolutely. But the thing is, people are still scared to do it.
And for good reason, because they continue to try to arrest people for it, and then they'll set you up on various charges. So the more people who do it, the more it becomes enshrined and normalized. And so I agree completely. I think we need more and more people doing that. So my hat's off to the cop watches of the world that are doing this on a regular basis. Again, all of these messages are very powerful, not just visually, but also, of course, what's actually written there. Very powerful messages, but... As you know from your own experience with your stepfather, these are the types of political phrases and the like that in some political contexts in different times in history have gotten people thrown in jail, have gotten people persecuted. Do you ever worry about the type of persecution that you might face in the America that's becoming the America of America with a K? Are you afraid of a time when this type of art will not be allowed?
I think the good news is just before that happens, or if I ever get arrested for or in trouble for something, I'm going to sell a lot of prints. That's going to be a good thing. It'll cover my legal fees. But in all seriousness, I mean, I don't know what else is worth doing. One of my great influences growing up and studying art history was an artist named Honoré Daumier. And he was a French artist, a very prolific artist. I mean, the guy made more artwork than the next 10 artists combined. And he made a lot of political artwork protesting the government during the time of the French reign of King Philippe. And he was put in jail briefly. I mean, I want to say a series of months, if not a year, for making an image that showed the king as this big, fat, you know, bulging behemoth on a small throne, gobbling up taxes and money and whatever, and what looked like defecating, you know, deeds and rights to a special select few. And I remember seeing that and thinking, it's human nature. We do this. Those of us who have an ability of any kind, there's always going to be some people in with that talent or that skill who are going to use it to say no to people. And I have so much respect for it that it's almost like, you know, whatever happens, I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to live in that day. And the idea is, it's almost like I heard you mention recently in one of your videos, it's a race. It's a race to see whether I'm going to, or people, me, not, I mean, I'm nothing. I'm a drop in the bucket, you know, whether people like us are going to have a ripple effect big enough to create a culture of questioning authority and thinking for themselves, to be able to withstand, America with a K. Because, I mean, this America right now, 10 years ago, would be science fiction if you told somebody about it, just 10 years ago, just right before 9/11. So it's only going to escalate. I think we're going to go into like a soft kind authoritarianism, a la, you know, Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, where people are going to love their servitude with their Xbox camera watching them, even though that was just taken off. I mean, the idea that that was on its way, even that Xbox camera, is just the perfect example of living in that like Wall-E universe. If you've seen that film. And I just want to race. I want to race. I want to do what you're doing. I want to do what people like Alex Jones is doing. And even if we disagree on certain things or agree on certain things, we're all real people. And we all really care about people in general. And we all hate bullies, I bet. And that's what I see this government as, of both parties. I feel like it's a big bullying, leeching system. And I just want to throw any little thing I have. You know, all I have is like a couple of hundred followers on Facebook and Twitter, and I've sold some prints, and a famous guy retweeted me a couple of times, and that's my claim to fame in terms of my art legacy as is right now. But I just want to keep going until it's cool, until it's like, this is what we do, this is what artists do. Like, I can't stand knowing that the most major political move by a famous artist in my generation was to help Barack Obama get elected by Shepard Fairey. Because I can't think about, like, that drives me insane. I love the guy's art, I love his style, but I can't believe that with all the information available to us, that somebody who has so much ability to research images and he's obviously politically motivated and geopolitically aware, could do that, could give so much weaponry to that person, to that concept, to that idea of force. Can't believe it. And to, at the very least, have not come out at this point, at some point, I don't know if he's, I don't think he has, and denounce it all.
Actually, I think he has. I think he did at some point come out and say that he didn't want to be associated with that iconography anymore. I'll have to double check on that, but yeah. I'm pretty sure he did make some sort of statement against what it became, or at least what Obama became.
Yeah, it can't be. If people like us aren't willing to take the heat and the flack and being called whatever we get called for having the ideas and sharing the ideas we have, then there's not going to be a hope, and then we might as well just curl up into a ball and eat our Dorito tacos and play our Xbox.
Yes, well, there's something to be said for that as well. All right. Well, I think that's a good note to wrap this conversation up on. So once again, I'm going to direct people to attacktheplanet.com so they can take a look at your artwork. And if people are interested in purchasing it, how do they go about doing that?
We have a store. Myself, I have one under Peter's store on the website. Brian has a store on the website. And right now, for a little while longer, we just released a new T-shirt featuring that skull with the Capitol building as a helmet on it. And anybody who pre-orders it, the first 25 people, we still have a few left. I'm sending out these hand-printed skulls with third eyes and flames. I'm doing these right now before you started interviewing me, and I'm going to start mailing them out for free for anybody who pre-orders a shirt for the regular price. Just if you don't mind supporting somebody who's like-minded.
Excellent stuff. All right, I think we're going to leave it there for now, but I certainly hope to see more of your work in the future. So Peter Santa Maria, thank you so much for your time today.
No problem, James. I'm going to send you a print you can put right back behind your head.
Excellent stuff. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.